first speaker is Frank Beck. Come on up, Frank.
Don't say his last name.
Huh?
Say his last name.
I didn't know.
Frank, I'm an addict.
Hey, Frank.
Grateful for Narcotics Anonymous. Don't worry about saying my last name, it's all right. Because really, at this point, you know, it's wide open. I was thinking about this topic and, you know, I'm glad that my sponsor is sharing behind me, right? Because what I've realized is that for a long time in my recovery, I've behaved more like a boy than a man in a lot of ways. And I looked at, you know, I was thinking to myself, why is that? You know, why is it that, you know, I can have all the things that, a lot of the things that I want, everything I need, but somewhere deep inside of me, all that's not enough. When I'm sitting home, I got my wife, I got the nice house, I got the kids, I got a good career, all these things that I acquired that I wasn't looking for when I got to Narcotics Anonymous, and I'm sitting there and there's still a level of discontent or dis-ease sitting in my spirit, and something whispers to me, you need something else. And I understand that the voice that whispers is the same voice that tells me a whole lot of things about myself. A lot of times I choose to believe or listen to that voice, man. And, you know, getting in this process of recovery, I was blessed to get an ass whooping. I was blessed to try to use drugs for a lot of years to fix something inside of me. And at some point I realized the drugs wasn't working, but I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop using, man. I went to any lengths. I could sit here and tell you a drug-a-log. I could sit here and tell you, look, one of the craziest things, and somebody was sharing about doing step work and how it helps you become aware of some things, right? I was thinking about this time, man, where I had got clean. And it was this guy that I bit it with, right? And he was HIV positive, right? And I was clean. I wasn't clean in Narcotics Anonymous. I wasn't using. I was abstinent, right? There's a difference between abstinence and recovery. I didn't know that at this time, right? But I had like 2 or 3 days, man. I had just came home. I was trying to stay clean on willpower alone. There was no surrender in my story. I thought that I had the solution. I thought that I could figure things out. And I seen that guy, and just seeing that guy and all the bullshit war stories, right? And I'm gonna tie this into like the boys to men process. All the shit that I would say in the institutions about how tough I was, or the gangster I was, or the, you know, or the thug that I was, and all that crap, man. When I told those lies and I saw that guy, right, it triggered something inside of me, and something said, man, get one. And I didn't have the information that Narcotics Anonymous, you know, has given me, and I believed a lie, and I said, hey, man, come here. And I said, go get us one. And I gave him the money, and I waited, and he came back, and we went up in the abandoned house in Southwest Baltimore. And you know, the house was empty, it was smelly, it was shit in the corner, it was piss. If y'all need me to describe that anymore, this is the type of environments that we use in, right? And that didn't matter. And he, you know, I put my shit in me. I felt a little something. He put his in him. He was starting to put that shit in. I seen the blood coming out. I didn't feel what I wanted to feel. And I said, wait. And if y'all ever see anybody inject drugs and the little blood comes out the needle, man, we call it the red ribbon, right? His blood was in the needle. And my disease said, you need to feel this dope. And I gave him $20 and I said, give me that. And I took that needle and without hesitation, I put that shit in my arm, man. And I felt what I wanted to feel. And that's the level of desperation that I'll go to fill that emptiness inside of me, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, when I was a kid, man, I was coming up, I remember feeling insecure. I remember feeling like I wasn't enough. You know, I remember feeling like I needed to learn how to fix that feeling. And what happened was I was very competitive. I played a lot of sports. I was good in school. I had a decent upbringing. I didn't have a father, though. And that was one of the major things. And I listened to a meeting this morning about parenting, and I see where, through the process of step work, where not having a father in my life had a major effect on me. But I was like 6 years old, and my grandparents, they were great. They did, you know, they was raising me. We had a next door neighbor. You know, I used to go over there a lot, hang out with, it was a kid over there that was my age, but they had an older brother and sister. And so I was over there. The house was always dark. It was always like, you know, gloomy in there and shit, man. And the older kids, I guess they was probably late teens or early, I don't know. I can't really remember, right? But they was drinking, and they gave me something to drink. And it was a brother and a sister. And, I don't remember feeling what they gave me, but all I remember is being in the bed naked with them, the brother and the sister, right? And like, something happened, man, and I don't remember what happened, really, you know? But after that moment, and we're talking about a boy, right? We're talking about a little kid growing up who's in the perfect world gets nurtured and gets reassured and gets, you know, gets told that you're enough and gets taught, like, as a young man how to grow up, you know, and become a man, right? I was missing that, man. So that happened, and automatically I felt like I was alienated. I felt like I had to hide this. I felt like I couldn't let nobody know what happened, right? And I felt like as I started to grow up, I always had this secret, man. And deep down in my mind, man, it made me question things like my sexuality. You know, so as I was growing up, now we're talking about a men's rap, right? The good thing about me right today, just for today, man, is right now I had no limitations on what I may say to you. I'm willing to put everything out there today. Narcotics Anonymous has taught me through the process of step work. I really don't care if I walk out of this meeting and you judge anything I say. I have enough people in my life that love me, that reassure me, man, that you can get honest, you can get gut-level honest. And I remember when I heard people say shit like they sucked a dude off at 6 years old and shit like that, how it, like, you know, now that's not what I did to my recollection, but I really don't know. It's funny, but it ain't, because there's somebody in this room that did that. And that shit had them locked and loaded all their life, and they ain't been able to escape that lie that addiction tells us. So here I am, man. I'm hitting my teenage years. I'm back and forth. You know, my mother remarried. She started having kids. I didn't feel like I fit into that family. I lived with both my grandparents back and forth. They lived a block from each other in West Baltimore. So I would go to one's house, to others. I had a lot of aunts and uncles. You know, I had an uncle that consistently antagonized me. You know, that consistently, like, bullied me and shit. And the other uncles would beat his ass every time he did that. But it was always a competition in my family. It was always a verbal or a physical competition. So I learned how to crack jokes. I didn't crack jokes to be funny. I cracked jokes to rip your heart out your chest and prove to you that I was better than you. That's the kind of jokes we cracked on each other. It wasn't to be funny, man. It was to really, like, dominate, if that makes any sense to you. So I learned how to sit around the street lights and shit, man, and we would crack jokes, and we'd be cracking on each other. It'd be like 10 people out there, and then it'd be like 9 people. It'd be like 8 people. Be like 7, 6, you know, 5. Then we're down to 2 people. I crack jokes, you go home. I'm standing there, I won. right? But I'm all by myself. And that thing inside me, look, and look, man, that certain something, man, that certain something still affects me on a deep level to this day, right? But I got a message of hope, man, because, look, check this out, man. When I was preparing, you know, for the meeting, right, I had to plan my day out a little bit, you know. I got to get a little rest here and there. I'm almost 50 years old. I got to start, you know, doing shit. I got to take a little naps once in a while, you know. We're talking about a men's rap, right? I go up, man, I lay down in my room. I put my CPAP machine on because it helps me sleep better. Because, you know, in this process, I started taking care of myself, right? And, you know, I was having problems sleeping. I was falling asleep behind the wheel and shit like that. And and somebody said, why don't you go to the doctor's, Frank? The doctor. That's a bad word, right? And I went, and he just briefly listened to what I said. He said, you got sleep apnea, without even giving me the test. But anyway, long story short, I'm up there with my machine on, right? And I got my shit on, it's blowing air, but it won't cover up the voice. The voice is saying, you ain't shit, man. You ain't fucking worthy, man. Who the fuck are you to do the men's rap? You a piece of shit, man. You ain't recovering, man. You don't always feel good, Frank. You don't always feel validated, man. You ain't able to do for yourself. You still need something outside of you to validate that emptiness on the inside, Frank. You still need that, man. You got 17 years, 5 months, and 2 days clean. You're supposed to be better than that. You don't work Steph's tradition. You got a whole bunch of sponsees and shit, man. You had service commitments. You was fucking popular in Narcotics Anonymous. Bullshit, right? You sought validation and you got it, Frank. You wanted everybody to know you. And guess what? All that shit didn't fill the void, man. And I still had that emptiness inside, man. And I'm talking about fucking an hour ago, man. I got a disease that wants to kill my ass clean, man. You know, talk about that negative sense is filled with a positive regard for others, right? But what about when there's a hate in your fucking heart, man? Still. What about when, like, we talk about one thing more than anything else is an attitude? What about when your attitude's fucked up with 17 years, 5 months, and 2 days clean, a whole bunch of steps, a whole bunch of service commitments and all that shit, man? And you can't really fucking talk about that shit, man, or your disease tells you you can't. And when you try to, you know, how you doing? Well, you know, here's where I got going, motherfucker, oh, I got to go. Because I'm talking to the wrong people. And I was praying, and as I was praying, my disease was fucking talking. Yeah. Disease can't hit a moving target in my ass. Motherfucker sitting back like a marksman. Or maybe he's having me run to the place where he can make me be stuck or trapped. It says we were trapped by the illusion. Mm. We were trapped by the illusion, man. And all I know is to get up here, man, and to break the cycle and be honest and tell you, like, look, I understand that my help comes from y'all. We're talking about boys to men. We're talking about growing up, man. I'm going to come up here and give you everything I got, man. And I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. We prayed. We circled up. I've been in and out of hope all weekend. I've been in and out of negativity. Let me keep it real, man. This is my story just for the day, man. Not going to sit up here and sell a Snow White fucking dream, man. This is where I'm at. I don't want to fucking use, man. I got to get honest. And I know I ain't alone in this shit. I know I'm not fucking alone, man. Look, man, I never had shit in my whole life. I mean, I didn't grow up poor like that. But what I mean is, when I became an adult, dude, my only task was to use. I didn't want shit. I didn't want a car. I didn't want nothing. I didn't have time for a girl because I was shooting dope and coke. And I ain't sharing. I don't share. You know? I'm getting used to live, man. That's it, man. I'm chasing. And I come to Narcotics Anonymous, beat and willing. Willing to follow directions. And as a result of attending a few meetings, we finally begin to feel like we belong somewhere. And look, something told me, man, Frank, you need to do another 90 and 90, man. I know what I need. I need to plug back in. Because look, one thing, I've been chasing that money. And I'm disconnected, man. Working 10, 12 hour a day, checks fat as shit. Right? Checks fat as shit. But I'm disconnected. But I'm right where I need to be. Because I know I've had conversations and I've got hope this weekend. I got hope, man. I know I don't have to use, but it was another addict talking about blowing his brains out and shit. Now, my disease ain't told me that today. Right now, it just wants me to be in and out of that uncomfortability. Let me tell you a little bit about the exact nature of this process. So I got clean, got the girl, right? We had about the same amount of clean time. At some point, not long after we got together, I started seeking validation outside of our relationship. I was still a boy. I was still thinking that, and look, man, you know the crazy part? It wasn't even about the act, the actual act of getting a woman. It was about the chase. We talk about the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. It was about the chase, man. That's what I came to find out. Because once I got it, I didn't want it. I wanted my wife. But I don't know how to commit. Or I didn't. So y'all know the story, man. I was living a lie. Hiding my phone and shit. Paranoid. Fucking got a lock on my shit. My wife is real good at figuring out my codes on my phone. I'm ready to switch over to the pupil shit or the fingerprint or something. She probably cut my damn finger off in my sleep. And this shit's funny, but it ain't, man, because of what I've done within the last year. While I'm here in Houston and my wife's home, she's messaging me like, what you doing? What's going on? We video chatting and shit, and I see fucking fear in her eyes. And my disease still whispers, boy, here's your chance. Here's your chance. One more, just one more. So I disconnected, I stopped using. But I don't know about you, right? But sometimes I gotta go back and just stick my toe in the water. So around March, it was this lady that used to come into my job and, you know, through the job process, I wasn't working at that place no more. So I figured I was in the clear and shit. She didn't work there. So, you know, being the little Mr. QT I am, I'm going to slide her a little text and shit. How you doing today? She texts me back. I'm cool. We have a little conversation. I'm like, you hungry? She's like, no, I'm married. I didn't know she was married, right? But I didn't delete that shit. See, one good thing about living clean, man, is I don't gotta delete shit today. You know what I mean? I'm not like, you know, on my phone like this in the car and shit, man. Look, I've been through all that shit. We driving and I got my phone tilted and shit because I'm scared that the text message that came through or the what do you call it, DM or the IM or whatever the fuck it is, that this is, you know, somebody that shouldn't be, my wife don't need to be seeing this. Well, I got another one for you. How about when you sharing shit and you get about 10 or 15 friend requests from females and you want to just be the good-ass recovering addict, you ain't got no motive in shit.
Come on.
You know what I mean? So you like, yeah, you know, instead of accepting the friend request, you message them. How's your recovery? And they live in a different state some motherfucking where. No, so I'm clear, right? No. Hey, look, NA is a small world. But see, I don't play this shit out when I'm seeking instant gratification. I don't play that shit all the way out. I can only see. I'm blinded, man. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, I'm asking for, like, nude pictures and shit. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. How's your recovery went down fucking hill quick, didn't it? And we're talking about pain, man, because guess what? I can't keep cutting in my spirit like that and not feel the effects of it. See, this is a spiritual process, this recovery process. This ain't just a stop using drugs. For me to stay in this recovery process, man, I had to get into this 12-step and process, right, and start looking at my spiritual condition. The one thing I really don't want to fuck with sometimes. You know, and right now my spirit is in a place where it's kind of like in limbo almost. Now, it's been since March. It's September. 6 months. I ain't been using. Guess what I'm left with? Me. I start chasing money. Right? And I'm caught up. I don't know if anybody's ever experienced that. Working 12, 14-hour days. The one thing I know, man, is there ain't no way around this shit. I got to sit with me at some point. I got to sit with me at some point, man. And that's what I've been practicing lately, man, and it does not feel good. It does not feel good, man. And some days I'm really hurting, man. I'm really pained up, and the good thing is, right, that I'm building relationships. I'm building relationships, man, because the messed up thing about this stuff is sometimes in your hometown you become like a target when you're sharing, man. Fucking people, you know, I mean, I don't want to play victim. That ain't my thing. But like sometimes, man, when you share, man, you become like a target or something, man. I love this process. I love Narcotics Anonymous. I love the friendships. I love the, y'all fill that void for me. I'm not going where I wanted to go. I did not go where I wanted to go, man. But I went where I needed to go. And I appreciate y'all for bearing with me in that process, man. You know, because what's happening is I'm transforming and I'm reaching into a new level of manhood. You know, one thing I learned in the penitentiary, and to me it's the truth, they told me that boys do what they want to do and men do what they have to do. So I can provide, right? And y'all are teaching me, the men and the parents in this process are teaching me, right? I have 3 children. I have an 8-year-old, a 15-year-old, a senior, a sophomore, and a third grader. They're all girls. Yeah. I come home from work after working 12-hour days. I'm physically beat. But I know that what didn't happen for me was when I got home, nobody said, "How was your day today?" And listen, was you scared in school today? How was your class? Do you have a test that you need to study for? Can I sit with you and listen to you read? My 8-year-old reads to me. We pray together every night. I haven't given up on the process, man. Even though I'm not feeling the process sometimes. Now look, I don't know if I'm alone on this shit. I don't know. I wish I could again give you the hunky-dory, every fucking thing is great-ass story.
Got 5 minutes.
Okay. All I know, though, man, is I know what I need to do. I know what the next step is. It's to go to a meeting. It's to be honest with my sponsor. It's to keep building relationships. It's to keep taking chances. It's to keep letting y'all in. Right? It's to build new relationships. It's to be supportive of others. Recovery starts at home. I can't be like, even though my attitude right now is sometimes shaky, I try not to take it out on them. So what I'm saying is there's a difference between how I'm feeling and what I'm doing. And it talks about sometimes we're doing better than we're feeling. And I'm like, when is this shit gonna snap? It's been 6 months, man. Guess what? I'm breaking a cycle, a lifelong cycle. I ain't never really been committed, man. So I can't expect that detox to be over just because I'm done. We got the transformation process, man. It's gonna take a minute. I got faith in that shit, man. I still got that second step hope. I still got that second step hope. To me, hope is a principle. I can practice hope. It ain't now, it ain't the defects that dress themselves up as hope no more. I'm not acting on that shit. I'm not sitting at the convention looking. Yeah, I might have looked a couple times. And it was, you know, it was things to look at, right? But I ain't playing that shit out. I ain't thinking how I can get her up in my room. I'm thinking, make your wife proud of you. This is different shit for me, man. This is different shit, man. So there's a principle called steadfast. There's a principle called steadfast, man. Look, this shit gets real, man, when all the shit is gone. When you ain't using shit and you stuck with you, it gets real. But the message is still hope and the promise is still freedom. And like I said, there's been periods throughout this convention where I felt the freedom, man. And y'all have shared, and I've been like, yes. And you have reaffirmed that this is right where I need to be. I came in here, I couldn't stop using drugs, and then I couldn't stop using all the other shit that I was using. Right? Because our inability to control our uses of drugs is only a symptom of the disease of addiction. First step. So if you're new, man, just don't use no matter what. And if you're old and you where I'm at, just don't use no matter what. Thanks for letting me share.
I would like to introduce our next speaker, Peter C.
I'm an addict recovering from the disease of addiction, and my name is Peter.
Hey, Peter.
First and foremost, I want to thank God for allowing me to be clean in the process of recovery called Narcotics Anonymous. And I want to thank Narcotics Anonymous for rescuing me from a life of dereliction, destruction, and despair. I'm an addict who's been clean for 25 years, 7 months, and 21 days. But I share, like I always share, that my predecessors have taught me that just because I've been clean for that length of time does not mean that I've arrived. Because anytime I think I've arrived, at some point, I gotta go. And just for today, there's no place I'd rather be here with you people in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, sharing on a men's rap, you know. And today's Just for Today talked about secrets, right? And this is a men's rap, and Frank talked about that. And when I think about the secrets that I came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, what comes to my mind is that if those secrets are still holding me hostage, it's kind of silly when I think about it, because that was over 25 years ago. As a matter of fact, our literature talks about when the seeds of addiction were rooted in us long before we picked up the drug, right? When I was a little boy, 8 years old, and I was sexually molested by a female, and my disease started growing and telling me that I must be the man because a female wants me, right? I did not know, which I learned through the four-step process, that this sexual deviant behavior that had manifested in me as an adult came from when I was a little child, right? I remember the sixth grade, when I was in the sixth grade, the janitor told me that I was handsome. But I didn't believe her. But all of a sudden, this little light bulb turned on in me and told me, well, I must be handsome if she told me I was handsome, right? Because I had two brothers. They were dark-skinned, and I was light-skinned with blue eyes. But in my mind, I always thought I was the ugly duckling. So when she told me I was handsome, I started to run with that and seek validation. I remember in the sixth grade, I took a loose-leaf notebook paper. I drew lines in it. And my goal was to kiss every girl in the sixth grade class. I didn't care if she was fat, if she was skinny, right? My brain just told me that I needed to do that. And I did do that. I did do that, right? But then at 16 years old, I started having multiple girlfriends. And my disease is still telling me that I must be the man because I could get anybody I want, right? It wasn't until I was an adult and I found myself in bed with a woman looking at the mirror and looking at myself and wondering how I was performing and not paying attention to the task at hand that I realized that something must be wrong with me. He identified over. Listen, my home group is the Miracles Alive four-step workshop, where we're always on the fourth step, and we meet every Friday at 7:30 p.m. to help each other stay clean. Our literature talks about that the step work process is where we return time and time again to the scene of the crime, right? And if you're here and you got some clean time and you haven't done a fourth step, the step working guide talks about, and this is the only place that this word appears, it talks about the insidiousness of our disease grows tentacles through time. And you'll find out that it has ravaged every area of your life. As a matter of fact, if you're here for a while, because I'm here and I've done a four-step in my first year in recovery, and I've done several after that, there's things that you forget because we got these built-in blockers because we go through some painful situations and you don't want to remember these things that happened to you. So it's important that we get into the fourth step as soon as we can so we can sort through the contradiction and confusion of our life to get to the exact nature of who we really are. Otherwise, you'll be here with clean time because you could accumulate clean time. I've seen people accumulate long periods of clean time. However, you will never reach that freedom that we talk about here, right? Our fifth step talks about that it's the key to freedom. And it says that we're doing a surgery of the spirit. So in my mind, if I'm doing the surgery of the spirit, I need to get with a spiritual surgical team. And I brought my team with me today. And my team are my sponsees, right? My sponsees keep me in check. They keep me relevant to the recovery process, right? And if I'm thinking about something, listen, let's get this straight. You don't get convicted for a thought. You don't get convicted for a thought. So even though I got clean time, I do get thoughts. However, I remember what they told me in the beginning. They said, play the videotape all the way to the end. Play it to the end to when you in divorce court, right? Give it up half of your 401k, because I got a 401k, right? Giving half of your house away because you sought 5 minutes of pleasure for another lifetime of suffering in a different way, right? Because we have a disease that's cunning, baffling, and insidious. And when I got here, I remember they told me get a Webster's dictionary when I got here, right? Those who are addicted today are even more fortunate. You can just speak into your phone, right? Yeah. But I had a dictionary. That was my basic too. And the word cunning says slick, witty, and ingenious. I said, damn, this disease is a goddamn Einstein. And baffling meant that it was confusing. And I remember the times that my mother said, but why? And the truth was, I didn't know why my damn self. And insidious means lying in wait, like the mugger waiting for you around the corner. And this disease is so cunning, baffling, and insidious that it'll check in on you from time to time to see if you're ready to check out, right? It checks in on you and tells you just because you got some clean time, maybe you could do it just one more time. Just a little bit different. You know, I'm grateful for the recovery process. I've been with the same sponsor since November 18, 1995. He knows me so well that when I tell him something, he goes, it wasn't like that. I tell you, man, and it's not that I'm trying to lie. It's because this disease will make you forget things. Will tell you that you don't have a problem. Will tell you that it never happened. That it never happened, you know? I stopped smoking about 2.5 years ago, and I started eating. And I said, yo, I got a problem with food. He went, nah. You always had a problem with food. He reminded me when I was a little boy, my mother used to take me to the Army and Navy store because the pants wouldn't fit my legs, but society called it husky. This was my fourth step. But in my mind, as a little boy, I just thought I was husky. You know what I'm saying? Yo, it says, we're legends in our own minds, and the only one who believes it is me. Right? Yo, it says the mask must come off. We can no longer continue to kick the can down the road. Right? We got to face everything and recover. So anyway, and I know it was that date. He's been sponsoring me with that date. Because he wrote it on a cassette tape. Yeah, we used to record on a cassette tape back in the day. And he said, thank you for being in my life. Thank you for being my sponsee. And I realized, and he told me this in early recovery, he said, you need to pay attention to everything I'm telling you. Because you never know when you got to give it back. You know? I was telling Jonathan, our sponsor Jonathan, and I was telling him, yo, God is doing some work on you. He looks for an opportunity to do step work anytime, right? And I said, you know what? I'm going to need you because I might need you to push my wheelchair on my 40th anniversary. You know what I'm saying? Just projecting the future, right? Because it says in our literature that we're building skyscrapers in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. But in order to build skyscrapers, you got to build a solid foundation. You cannot build a skyscraper on a shaky foundation. So that if you get cracks in that foundation, we're able to apply that spiritual mortar that we talk about here, right? So we can stand tall in the rules of Narcotics Anonymous. I want to welcome this gentleman that's new to Narcotics Anonymous, man. You know, the newcomer is always the most important person here, you know? If you're new, welcome. If you think you're an addict, welcome. If you don't think you're an addict, welcome. However, if you got paid Friday and a weird series of events started happening in your life and you woke up this morning and you had just enough for a roll with butter and one of those little juices, I was shaving last week and I said, they used to be a quarter. I don't know, what are they, $5 now? Because they knew it was a tool, so they figured they upped the price, you know? Price and demand, right? They charged $5 for it, man, you know? Narcotics Anonymous is a spiritual, non-religious program, right? And spirituality, I learned, gives me the ability to communicate with each other at an emotional level. We call that the language of empathy. My wife calls it the touch without the touch, right? Where we join together as one. Unity, right? We were talking about that, man. Unity. Unity is the antidote to alienation. Dig that, right? What our disease likes to build itself on, alienation. So if you want to get out of alienation, even in recovery, right? The key is to stay with us, right? To join us on this mission to carry this life-saving message, man. And what is our message? I never forget, look, I was in a detox, right? 1994, and I was leaning on my chair, and there were some people that came up there that looked just like you guys, and the guy said that the message was hope and that the promise was freedom. That an addict, any addict, when he said any addict, back then, I heard somebody say it today, fat addict, skinny addict, tall addict, short addict, but they said HIV positive addict. When I got clean, HIV was running rampant. As a matter of fact, my mother had HIV. My mother passed when I had 1 year clean. We're talking about growing up as a man in recovery, you're gonna go through some of these things, right? My mother died first year clean. They used to call me a mama's boy. Peer pressure, right? Oh, you a mama's boy, you a mama's boy, right? But the secret was that my mother was physically abusing us. Today would be considered torture. She would give us a can of crackers. It had a metal lid on it. We would take it. She would give us the hammer and the nail, and we had to make holes in it. And when she would punish us, she'd tell us to kneel on that. She was torturing us. So when she was dying in the hospital, part of me was like, it's good for you. You deserve it. And I had to get honest with that with my sponsor. I said, why do I feel like I just want her to die? You know? But that also gave me the ability to make an amends with her, because she told me, she said, I said, Ma, when you come out of the hospital and you go back to Puerto Rico, who are you gonna go with? She said, you. I said, me? She said, yeah, your brother talks too much. So to me, at least she accepted me again. And it was just those little words that let me know that my mother had accepted me again, you know? And I was grateful for that. You know, another thing I went through in early recovery was I got a letter from child support court. I had two kids. When I was 19 and like 23, I had two kids already. I came into recovery with two kids. And when I got married with my wife, who I've been with married for 23 years, we just celebrated 23 years, August 31st. We had another kid. We had a recovery baby who's gonna be 21 now. And I got the letter for child support for my son. And I told my wife the night before, I said, you know what? When I go see the judge, I'm going to let the judge know that I have a daughter, right? When I get to the courtroom, guess what? On the calendar, it already had my daughter's name on it, right? And I was on my third step when that happened. And I remember hearing you guys said, do the right thing for the right reason, right? So I went in with the intentions to do the right thing, right? And when the judge asked the mother, has he been taking care of the kids? And she was a using addict. And she said, yeah. The judge says, you owe no arrears. My son was 8 years old already. Say, you owe no arrears. You pay from this day forward. And I'm here to tell you that a couple of years ago, when my baby became 21 years old, I finished paying child support, you know? So if you're here and, you know, you gotta go to child support and you're just getting clean and you think it ain't gonna be over, you know, time, man, time. Our most precious commodity is time, it says in our literature, right? All you gotta do is follow directions here. They told me to pay. I said, you know what? I'm pretty unmanageable. Just have it take it out of my paycheck directly. You know what I'm saying? So I took the hit that first time, but every time I got a raise, I felt like I got a raise because I wasn't counting that money anymore, you know? How much time I got?
9 minutes.
Oh, I got about 9 minutes. This is impossible for me to condense 25 years. I got so many beautiful stories, you know, but there's some that I want to share with you guys that I'm hoping would impact you guys. 2016, I got a call from my son, called my wife, and he was feeling really sick, and my wife went to visit him, and my son almost died. He almost OD'd on alcohol. Alcohol is a drug, right? I had 22 years in recovery. I got caught up with money, property, and prestige for a while. I thought that the trick to getting more money was to work harder and make more money. It took me a long time to learn that the trick was to save more money, right? But anyway, I got caught up with, spend less, right? I got caught up with money, property, and prestige. Thank God I didn't use. I got disconnected from the program. The Living Clean book had just came out. And it said that you can recommit to this program at any given time, right? And my son went to the detox. I went to visit him, and I told him, what are you going to do? He said, I'm going to make 90 meetings in 90 days. I said, what? How the hell did you know that? I brought him into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous at 8 years old. And he remembered that. He remembered that our suggestion said that if you're new, make 90 meetings in 90 days. So I called my sponsor. I said, sponsor, you know, my son's in the detox. He's going to come out. He's going to make 90 meetings in 90 days. He said, that's wonderful. He said, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going to drop him off in the meeting so he can get his. He said, no. He said, you need to make 90 meetings in 90 days. So with 22 years clean back then, I was like, 90 meetings in 90 days? How the hell can I do that? I work. I own a business. I'm a landlord. You know, my life is full. And then all of a sudden, this principle called open-mindedness came into my mind. And I said, you know what? Let me just do a meeting a day. And guess what? I was able to do a 90 meeting in 90 days. And you know what I found out? I found out that my spirit was fragile. My spirit was weak. As I heard y'all share, all of a sudden, my emotions were coming up. I was emotionally unmanageable. That's when I realized that our step working guide said that we had a disease that was physical, mental, and spiritual, but it added emotional in there. Another layer indicator to let you know when you're further away from your recovery process. When your emotions are unstable, there's something going on. And the solution is always spiritual in nature. And as I kept making those 90 meetings in 90 days, I could actually feel my spirit getting strong again. I could feel myself. And then all of a sudden, you know, I was able to share. I was able to speak again. My sponsor would laugh at me. He said, it's like riding a bicycle. You never forget this stuff. Once it's in you, once you've come into the rules of Narcotics Anonymous, if you try to pick up and use, you're going to hear the echoes of the voices of the members in the rooms. It's going to say, keep coming back. Keep coming back. Keep coming. Because I've been through that, man. My first meeting was an anniversary. They welcomed me with a key tag. They told me, keep coming back. I went back out that day and used. And all I heard was you guys saying, keep coming back. And the next day, I ran my ass back into the meeting, man. That was a Sunday. I came back on a Monday. That was it for me. I was done, man, you know. I didn't want to use anymore. So anyway, so my son, I made the 90 and 90. I got recommitted to the program, and then I realized that doing step work again, that there was different levels of recovery here. I realized that even though I got clean time, the more I continue to go into the step work process, the more it's continued to be revealed to me, right? So if you're here, if you've gone through the 12 steps, and you think there's nothing more, I'm telling you, there's more. But you're never going to know unless you get involved with this, right? And God gives us some gifts. They call sponsees. They think I'm helping them, but the reality is they're helping me, right? They keep me relevant, like I said, right? They keep me honest. They keep me paying attention to what I do because I know they're watching me from all angles, right? The last thing I want to share before I shut it down, my father, you know, so, you know, we're aging in recovery, right? There's a chapter in the Living Clean called Aging in Recovery. But it just hit me one day that in order for you to age in recovery, first you have to come in here, get clean, stay clean, then you can age in recovery, right? Otherwise, you're not aging in recovery, right? So I'm grateful to be aging in recovery. And one of the things that happened to me about a year and a half ago is that my father caught a stroke, you know? My father's aging too. And my father's what I call an undiagnosed addict. The doctor said, no candy, and stay away from the Red Bulls, and stop popping those Viagras at 79. I'm telling you, I know some people identify with that one. I didn't even realize people were doing that. You know, because I'm not involved in that stuff, right? And he would do push-ups, drink the Red Bull, pop the Viagras, take his diabetes medicine, and then take the sugar. He said, don't worry, I got it under control. I got it all calculated, figured out. That's crazy, man. And then sure enough, man, at one point, he just caught a stroke, man. I mean, he went from like a buff 78 years old to a fragile little old man. And, you know, I realized later that God had sent me on an assignment. I went to Puerto Rico, and he gave me the power of attorney over his finances. You know, and I have, there's six of us. And I was the one that was tasked with that responsibility. Why? Because Narcotics Anonymous has taught me to be responsible, right? Narcotics Anonymous has taught me how to pay bills and care for others. As a matter of fact, I'm more careful with his money than I am with mine, you know? If I don't got a receipt for his expense, it becomes my expense because I'm not gonna put it in unless I could prove that I bought it for him, you know? And he's doing a little bit better. I mean, he'll never be the same man, but he's doing a little bit better. But through him, I see me, right? It makes me face my own mortality. However, I got to remember that that same fear that drove me to using in my early days can drive me to go insane later on in my recovery, right? We use the same tools that we use in the beginning still apply today. Just for today. This is a just for today program, right? So I got to live in the today, you know? I'm grateful for this program. It allowed me to see the world through a new set of lenses, right? Our literature talks about being happy, joyous, and free. And it describes joy as seeing colors for the very first time. I'm truly grateful to be in the process of recovery. My name is Peter, and thank you for letting me share.
Please help me thank the speakers, Frank and Peter. Another hand of applause for them.